Hello and welcome to Connections. Along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. It's a Tuesday. It's a beautiful Tuesday at that, but it's a crazy world that we are living in. Rick, hello, welcome.
Hi, Bill. And I'm looking forward to your guest today and seeing what he has to say about this crazy world.
It is it's a crazy world, and maybe it's the end of the world. We'll talk. We're close, man. We are very close.
This is a song about that.
It's the end of the world. Yeah. Which brings us right to Blackout Tuesday, Rick. What you were just telling me? What the heck is Blackout Tuesday?
It's really weird. I went to our SoundCloud a platform to upload our news, our 24/7 news, and it was blacked out. The buttons and everything else were just like someone had put magic marker to it. And then I said, "What is Blackout Tuesday?" And CNN has a report that music industry leaders vow to pause business for a day in observation of Blackout Tuesday. And just very quickly here, it says the show will be paused. This is from CNN. At least that's the message coming from leaders and artists in the music business as part of a movement being referred to as Blackout Tuesday. A Twitter account for a couple of music executives appears to have been created on Sunday amid a weekend that saw communities across the country protesting the murders of George Floyd and others at the hands of police. And so let's see here. There's a big posted from Quincy Jones Productions that says, due to recent events, please join us as we take an urgent step of action to provoke accountability and change. As gatekeepers of the culture of the music industry, it's our responsibility to not only come together to celebrate the wins, but also hold each other up during a loss. Join us Tuesday, June 2, as a day to disconnect from work and reconnect with our community. Now, I don't know what that means actively. But the quote from the executives is that we will not continue to conduct business as usual without regard for black lives. Tuesday is meant to intentionally disrupt the work week. So I don't know. I have to stay tuned and see what develops.
Yeah, it seems like we've been disrupted enough here. But, man, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point. Yeah.
Speaking of disruption, the Salem Police Department, I don't have the story in front of me, but I think I have it pretty much in my head here. They had an issue yesterday. It was making all kinds of news where the official Salem Police Twitter account tweeted this over the weekend at Mayor Walsh of Boston and at Governor Patrick regarding, hey, you just issued a permit for a parade for 10,000 people, and I can't even go to a restaurant. Now, that's basically the essence of the tweet from the Salem Police Department Twitter account. Subsequently, it's a sergeant or whoever it was, a woman actually, has been suspended with pay for that tweet. The mayor, I know, made a statement yesterday, very upset with it. Police chief, very upset with it, and so on. And I obviously understand that, and because it was really not appropriate for the official Salem Police account or whatever. But it speaks to what the frustration. I mean, where we're at right now, and so on. And in our podcast actually today, and the governor makes a solid point that throughout the day over the weekend, Sunday, there were tons of peaceful protesters. But I guess once it turned dark, a different crowd came in, and that's what we're seeing nationally now, too.
Well, the tweet was directed not at Governor Patrick, but rather at Too Tall Duvall.
That's Governor Patrick. Yeah. Too Tall Duvall. Yeah. That's Governor Baker.
Yeah. The thing that sticks out for me, Bill, and, you know, as educators, we've been involved in this with kids and stuff. It's that there are things you can say privately that won't get out to the public and you won't get in trouble for, but that if you say those things publicly as a representative of whoever you're working for, you're going to get in trouble. And it seems to me like that's the case, that this was certainly a case of frustration, but somehow, and you know, it's also one of those things, I don't know if you've ever done this, but you know that I have. I'm emailing something personal and private to someone else mistakenly, I have the wrong address up there on the box. And I think that can probably happen with Twitter, too. You think you're on your personal account, and maybe you're on your business account. So I hope it's much ado about nothing. But as you know, given the climate, as it were, and the fact that this was a high-ranking Salem police officer, then it takes on an additional importance, I guess.
Yeah, I'll go back. It actually is an REM song. It's The End of the World. Very inappropriate. You know, unfortunate. End of the world? I don't think so necessarily. Again, very inappropriate to be coming from the Salem Police Department. But I'm surprised Twitter didn't flag that.
Get a warning?
That tweet. Yeah, you know, come on.
Well, that's the thing. I think if I were teaching today, man, I'd have a hard time with it, because the social media stuff, boy, you say anything, do anything, and it's instantaneous communication. You put something on the internet, bang, it's out there worldwide forever. And even though that tweet was deleted, I guess rather quickly, here we are.
Yeah. Well, if you want to see the actual tweet itself, there is a story in the Salem News today on salemnews.com. But if you search Julie Manganis from the Salem News, the reporter, Julie has has captured the tweet on her Twitter account, and you can go to her Twitter account and see the actual tweet from the Salem Police Department. So, yeah.
You know, one thing I want to mention, Bill, we talked about it last night on North Shore Sports Night, about what's going on right now with respect to racism and the race and the community and so on. And civil rights, I guess, is a better way to put it, and the murder of George Floyd. There was is it Jason Pierre? He's an ABC newsman, and he's an African-American newsman. And he was on Sunday, and he said, the thing is, the unintentional racism sometimes, being a black person, he said, you know, I have an expensive car. I have a good car when I drive across the country and go to do these different stories. He says, and I get pulled over pretty frequently just because I'm driving an expensive car. But he said, and this really got to me. He said, but you get humiliated in ways that most people don't, I think. And he wasn't being rude or anything or being mean or angry. He just said, the other day, I was in a grocery store. And I was sanitizing the grocery cart with some, these wipes, Lysol wipes and so on. And I had my face covering on. And a woman was just standing there with her arms folded waiting for me. And I looked at her and I said, you know, can I help you? What's going on here? And she said, oh, well, as soon as you're done with it, I'll take it. Thank you. And he was saying that she was implying that he was a worker just because he was black. And cleaning off the grocery cart. And it wasn't, it was just a very subtle thing. And he's doing all this work for himself, and this woman wants to take it from him. And I thought, man, most of us don't experience anything like that. A very, very minor thing. But it's indicative, I think, of the way many of us don't understand how other people live and how other people are treated. You know, what's the saying, walk in my shoes for a mile or something like that? So that was enlightening to me, and I certainly didn't tell the story as well as he did. But I think that what's going on now, Tim and I were talking about this last night, it's just so reminiscent of the 60s all over again.
Yeah, I've heard references to comparing 2020 to 1968, and it is to some extent. I think it's a little bit different. You know, again, setting aside what's happened with the violence over the last several days, but you know, the thing about the racism piece is what disturbs me is that the story you told is totally right. In other words, that this happens all the time, and it's little things, and yet it's not little things as well. Whether it be within mm-hmm. education, be within business, those social interactions, police interactions, and you know, this one event to me, you know, like I don't know anyone that hasn't condemned it. You know, so you know. And I've heard this discussion. So no one has condoned it. Every single person has condemned this in the strongest terms because it's ridiculous. And, you know, I hear conservatives, you know, talk about, well, maybe he should have been charged with first degree murder. Why third degree murder? Okay, those are legitimate discussions. But I do think that the whole race issue is neglected. You know, you have these incidents. you know, you go back and you have these incidents, and what happens afterwards? To some extent, you could say, big picture, nothing. You know, mm-hmm. nothing happens. That's, you know, and so I just wish that we were able, you need to teach about this piece. Tolerance, acceptance, of respect needs to be taught. And that's the thing that when this all ends, and this will die down at some point, I believe, I guess, you know, what will we learn from it? What will we do moving forward? And if anything that's happened in the past, we're not going to do much, which is discouraging, because the reporter that you cite, Rick, is absolutely right. This, we need to, you know, we're better at this than what we're seeing right now. And, you know, the violence has nothing to do with what happened to George Floyd, to be honest with you. But on the other hand, those peaceful protesters around the country, they're speaking, and I believe they're walking for not just George Floyd, but for all the things that you just mentioned, Rick, and all the other things that happened in this country with the race piece. But so it's very discouraging to see this, because in a way, all of this destruction, it's just destruction, has nothing, you know, really has nothing to do with race. It does. I don't see it.
And that's you're right, Bill. That's we talked about this a lot. And that has to do with opportunism. As the president, I really agree with anything he says, but he said, you know, thugs, those are the thugs. Those are people who are criminals, and they're ruining it for everyone else. Because I watched Sunday I watched the protest in Boston until about 7:15. And I said, okay, this is the way to do it. Thousands and thousands of people, all different colors, shades and shapes, walking the streets with signs peacefully. And they had their coverings, their face coverings on. And it was very, very peaceful and very powerful. Then I wake up the next morning and I read about the violence. So you are 100% correct. The idiots, the criminals, the cowards who were perpetrating the violence, they've got to be caught and stopped, no question. But as you said, what else do we do? Where do we go from here?
Well, you know, the other piece here, and now we're so serious here, is that, you know, when this, you know, I think this president, you know, has a huge opportunity on race. I felt our previous president had a huge opportunity on race to really do things to make a difference, to bring people together. And this is now what is turning out to be, you know, obviously we're at the depths here, but we have there's a huge opportunity here to do some things that haven't been done before. And, you know, I just hope that there's a moment that we capture this and so on. I was going to say something else too here, Rick.
You know,
go ahead.
I'm going to say what you think of that. I was just thinking of that same thing, and there's a void. And at least in 1968 until April, you know, we had Martin Luther King, and we had his staff and people, and we had Robert Kennedy who were speaking, you know, to try to unite the country. And right now, I think that, you know, the situation is screaming for something like that.
Yeah, you know, I remember 68. I was pretty young, but I do remember. I mean, 1968 was about Vietnam, though. You know, 1968 wasn't necessarily about race. There was a race piece to it, but it got big because of Vietnam. That was the beginning of the, you know, in that era. You know, with a give or take a few years, and it continued on into 72 and so on. Is the fight against the, if you will, against Vietnam. And so there was that. That was what people were protesting against. And then you had the so-called establishment. And, you know, you don't hear the term law and order like the president just said this week, and expressed like you. That's what we heard back in 1968. So that's kind of abrasive to a lot of folks, I think, you know, that go back that far. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm against law and order, but just the way it was, the way right. It's been presented. But, you know, here's my message that I wish that people, the real peaceful protesters, the real people that really want to affect change here. And trust me, I've worked with a lot of police officers when I was in education, and some of these guys, you know, they get it. They know what's going on. All it takes is like several bad apples. And, you know, in this case, it looks like four bad apples and one very bad apple. And, you know, and it ruins it for a lot of great police work. And you've seen a lot of good things happen in all of this. But I wish the peaceful protesters would say tonight, for example, I'm not going out. I'm just staying home. And let's stop this, because then it's the people that are right. driving in from out of state with the pallets of bricks and with all the other weaponry that they have to do the destruction. they will be the only people out on the streets, and you know, and just give it a time out for a night or two, and then go out there and do it the right way, and really affect change, and stay with it. You know, don't give up after after a couple of weeks. So you know, I don't know. I just think this is such an incredibly. I mean, every single person has condemned this to the hilt. And you can't condemn it any more than people have condemned this one incident in Minneapolis, but this reporter, the story the reporter tells, that stuff's massive, and I don't think we ever get it as a country of what people are going through, you know, with these it's a very subtle kinds of people also say, oh, white privilege, oh, there's no white privilege. Well, yeah, there's white privilege because you know that's a buzz phrase, you know, that people talk about, and so we get conflicted with this, with these catchphrases, and we really don't get down to the heart of the issue, and you know, the other part too is, Rick, there aren't a lot of people, you know, that really care about the end of the day. You know, you need to have more people care about this in a legitimate, honest conversation and actions.
I have one more short story, Bill, if I could. You know, you mentioned 68, the Vietnam protest and so on. I was drafted into the Army in 1970. And in my unit, at basic training, after basic training, there were two places you could go. You go to Fort Polk, Louisiana, which was infantry. And it meant if you go to the Fort Polk, then you're going to Vietnam. If you go to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, there's a good chance you can get into the National Guard and the artillery and you can go home. Well, as it turned out, I'm white. I ended up going to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, the artillery, got into the National Guard, and went home. But every single, and I can't emphasize this enough because I remember writing about it when it happened, every single black kid in our platoon at basic training, every single African-American went to Fort Polk, Louisiana. And I don't know how many white guys went. I don't have any idea, but I know I didn't. And to this day, I think had I gone to Fort Polk, I wouldn't be here talking because I don't think I'd have made it in Vietnam. But I mean, that just stood out to me. Like, what's going on here? Why is that? I just didn't understand that. And you're right. It's only going to make a difference if someone steps into the breach and we all decide we can do better. And, yeah. And you, Bill, you've been there. You know it. You know we can do better.
No, absolutely. I just think that, again, I think this is a huge opportunity. And, to try to bring people together, and I think it's going to take some, you know, more than just photo ops, if you will, you know those, and I just think that again that we need to, oh man, it is such a frustrating thing to see this, because this has been something that's been bothering me now for decades, to be quite honest with you, because again. We as a society, we can only focus, you know, on a handful of things, and most of the time, this is not one of them. It really isn't. And again, I separate, you know, the act, you know, this one act in Minnesota as just being horrific, and the response to it, I think, from 90% of the people out there, you know, they just want to protest peacefully. But it's that other 10% that, you know, I've heard it described. I've watched the news. I mean, you have the peaceful protesters, you have the Antifa crowd, and then you have, you know, a criminal element that will be opportunists that will take advantage of this.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, if you can see things in that way, then we can begin to deal with it. But I don't think we can deal with it until we see it in those ways. And the criminal piece, I get it. There's frustration piece on that. But the anarchists and the other folks, those are the ones that, you know, I think I think the president was talking about this past week.
And the good, I can't call it good news, but one thing that came out of this in Minnesota was the fact that because the spotlight shone on this event so publicly, they were able, the family was able to get a separate autopsy. And boy, did that come out, you know, as an explosive event, the fact that it's completely opposite of what the medical examiner came out with. And so, you know, at least there is that small little victory for the family.
I just think that whole video is so hard to watch.
And I
haven't watched the whole thing. I can't. I won't. You know what I mean? But and so imagine that's being your family member or a friend and beyond that, whatever. I mean, it's just horrible. So I get it, you know, that but, you know, I think that it's just outrageous. But I mean, it speaks to, you know. You know, what is Minnesota, what is Minneapolis going to do about this? What are they going to do about
right.
it? And to be quite honest with you, I don't think, I watched the news, I'm not impressed. I'm really not impressed with Minneapolis, you know, and what, you know, how they are dealing with this, to be quite honest with you, as far as, telling us, you know, what they are going to do as a police department about this piece. You know, I don't get it, but we'll see.
What do we got coming up today? Because every time you have Dave on, Dave Rattigan, it shines a little light. It makes the day a little bit brighter, Bill, and I hope that's the case today.
We are going to put – I'm going to try to put 2020 into context, and, man, it's not going to be good.
So much for good news.
And so stay with us right here today on Connections. A daily news podcast for the North Shore, North Shore Today. North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, as we keep you connected with the North Shore. Connections continues now with Dave Rattigan, writer, educator, comedian, and observer of the world. And Dave, 2020, is this the worst year ever? I mean, could anything get any worse than what we're seeing now?
I think it's certainly the worst year well, let's put it this way. I think it's the worst year in my lifetime. It's the worst year in your lifetime. On the bright side, there's no polio, there's no scurvy, or at least not as much. So that's a good thing. And then on the bad side is everything else. Everything else. I mean, the economy is bad. There's the invisible virus, the black plague of the 2020s has come. We've got murder hornets. We've got scattered canaries. It's attacking everything. It's attacking the scattered canaries are stealing money from our unemployment system, and the murder hornets are killing other bees. It's bee on bee crime. I would say, and then obviously, there these communities that are already hurt. They're all set to reopen. Riots and looting, that horrible incident in Minnesota. And yeah, I would say probably it's not the worst year of all time, but we should remember it's just the beginning of June. We've got plenty of time left to make it worse.
No, I agree with you on that. I mean, and for those of our listeners that are a little older and go back to the Depression, all right, you may have us on that one. Yeah, you know, they go back to World War II. Okay, all right, I'm with you. But in recent history, this has got to be one of the worst years. And it actually seemed to start right in January too, because I think the other day I was looking at some the stock market information just for the heck of it. And I think it pretty much did peak right near the end of December. Went down a little bit in January. That was before all the coronavirus stuff. And then obviously, you know, went way down once the coronavirus and the economy was shut down and so on. And so you have the economic piece. Then you have the business closed downs, the schools closed, everything closed. And now, of course, the people are coming out. What they're rioting, they're looting. It's just a horrible situation, and it's just you can't make this up. I mean, just think about how we were looking at the world back in January, New Year, right? 2020. You know,
you told us how you were looking at the world, Bill. You're sitting in the back of your limousine with the paper open and looking at the stock market
exactly.
through your monocle. And
my top hat, as tastefully a little askew, fashionably askew.
I'm sure you weren't wearing your top hat in the back of your limo.
Oh yeah, I do. That'd
be so gauche.
I have the driver take it while we ride. Yeah.
But it's just been. You're right. In the stock market, which is part of this economic collapse. And there was nothing worse than seeing on TV this weekend on Sunday, seeing the you know, I told you this, I'm watching the television and I'm watching the protests. And after all the violent protests, here's one in Boston, and it's peaceful. And it's not just peaceful. People are wearing their masks and they're socially distanced. There are a lot of people, but they've socially distanced from one another. And I'm thinking, this is how we run a protest. Then I go and watch a movie, and I come back after the movie, and there's people running through what was a window. I guess it's still a window. There's just no glass in it anymore. Holding a television set, holding just packages under their arms, running to their car, and really a bizarre. I've never seen looting like that, but it's obviously, you know, you're decimating your own local economy at a time when people desperately need to get to work, or so we're told. And it's the whole thing surreal. But I have a theory on it, Bill. I have a theory that this is the end of the world.
If this isn't the end of the world, we're very close to it. You know, what else, what's next? You know, you ever had that happen? People where, you know, like things are going so bad for a group or something or other. What is next? You wonder. Just think of the things in the last weekend. They're targeting the White House. They're targeting, I forgot what it's an Episcopal church across the street, a historic church across the street. They set fire to that. You know, yep. Okay, they set fire to the Minneapolis police station the first night. Okay, all right, fine. But then all these other minority-owned and all the businesses with people that are, you know, have been shut down for weeks now, you know, right. now they've lost everything, and I don't know. It's awful.
Yeah, and, you know, you say, I think it's an easy thing to look and say, or let's sort of this way. I think it's the first thing you think, when you look at the businesses, you think, here's a mom and pop business that is probably, you know, could go either way, but they've chosen to reopen, which means that you and I have places to go to dinner and sit 6 feet apart from each other. But there are busboys going to be employed. There are chefs going to be employed. There are restaurant people who are really, really hurting, a lot of them, that they get to go back to work. And obviously they go out and if you say, well, they're locally owned and mom and pop and all that, but even the chains, I mean, how many people are employed by a big chain, department store who aren't going to be able to go back to work? And, you know, maybe they're making with the package that the government's offering, maybe they're making more money than, staying at home than going to work. But there's nothing good about it except for the fact that, you know, someone's got a new TV. And even then, it's still gotten gains. So, yeah, it's the end of the world. It's think about it. We started out where the germs are fighting us, the insects are fighting us, the issue of cop on black violence is still there, and you know that we've got our economy, which is already hurting, and we're destroying it from within because we fight each other. And then obviously these, and I think in the case of Boston, certainly all these people were as opportunists, immoral opportunists. And they're just, you know, stealing and ruining and sacking the local economy. It's the end of the world. I mean, you think to yourself, what could get worse, Bill? How could it get worse? And that's the reason we want to tune in this week to see what's going to go worse.
Yeah, no, there's two things too. I mean, you know, I really appreciate the people that want to peacefully protest and take the time this past weekend to walk and protest or to try to make a statement, a positive statement about this. And you got to remember, when they're doing it peacefully, it is a positive statement. However, once you bring your sledgehammer, which I happen to have my sledgehammer with me, smash a window, you go in, and then there are opportunists, taking care of this. The other thing too, Dave, opportunists taking advantage of this. But the other thing here is, like, this is how bad this has been in the last few days. Just last week, people are thinking, "Oh, wow, maybe I can go out and get my hair cut again now." You know, this is great. The barbershops and the nail salons are reopening now. And today, I'm thinking, what? Who are you? You know what? Who cares? You know what I mean? Your barbershop or hair salon is gone now in some of these cities.
You know, that's actually pretty funny, because you think about the fact that we were all wound up about our haircuts. And I actually thought it's been a good period for haircuts. My daughter's cut my hair twice. She the first time she did okay. Well, she butchered me a little bit both times. But, you know, it's you look at the negative thing of not being able to get your hair cut, and it's like you can't get your hair cut. You have to do it yourself. You have to get somebody else in your household to do it. But the positive thing is, I have a bad haircut. You have a bad haircut. The people next door have a bad haircut. We've all got bad haircuts. Suddenly it's like living in England, where everyone's just got a bad haircut, and you don't have to worry about it. And it's acceptable. It's acceptable. It's like if the clothing stores didn't open, we could all wear last year's fashions, and it would be fine. We wouldn't be hung up on it. It'd be like, oh, you're wearing crap? So am I. And it'd be equality. And it's things that don't matter that we're all wound up about. And obviously, is it going to get worse? Is it all going to be about, I want to get to the, you know, are they going to shut down the barbershops? They're going to shut down the barbershops that have had their windows broken.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, you talk about clothes, and like a lot of us have not put on our good clothes or even our halfway good clothes for weeks now. And the stores are thinking, okay, these folks are going to come out now and maybe they'll come and buy some of our clothes that have been in the store for weeks and weeks and weeks. Or,
well, you know something? Here's why we will have to buy the clothes, because we've all been sitting at home and eating. And so when we try to put on our old clothes and get out of our sweatpants, we're not going to fit. So we're going to have to buy new clothes until we lose that COVID weight.
Yeah, there is some irrationality to our thinking in the sense that, yeah, my clothes still fit, but wait a minute, what are you wearing? Yeah, sweatpants.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly, right.
I got to tell you this, the one beacon of hope that shines through all of this is that we've still got our leadership that's always looking out for us. And in the midst of all this madness, you've got your man, President Donald Trump, finally attacking the real culprit. No, not Jeff Bezos, but Twitter and social media, and you know, hysterical.
Well, even the social media battle last week, which was such big news, is like, oh, who cares now? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, it's just,
you know, I'm a comedian. I care a great deal about that. I just think the fact that, again, it's not exactly Nero fiddling while Rome burns, but it's pretty close. And it is, it's an issue that is really funny. It should have been addressed. A lot of people have talked about it for a long time. And why does it finally get addressed? Because Twitter fact checks Trump's tweets and posts something on it. And they did what they should have done. They did what was appropriate to be done at Twitter. And now Trump gets mad, and maybe there is going to be a movement. Maybe there will be something that will kind of shift a change in laws that will put the Twitter and Facebook more under the, in the category of a publisher versus a platform. A platform, of course, being that you can post anything you want without culpability. A publisher saying you need to take some responsibility for what runs over your vehicle.
And the other thing too, Dave, it was just weeks ago that people were panicking over toilet paper. You know, toilet paper. Come on. You know, I wish we had those days back.
You know, the good old days. The good old days. Because you throw a toilet paper at a window, it just bounces off the window. It doesn't break it. But, of course, in the midst of the looting, this is something I heard on TV. One of the commentators on TV during the Boston looting talked about the fact that one of the first stores hit was a drugstore, and people went in and they took what they said. One person came out with four packages of toilet paper. You know, first things first. Imagine smashing a store window, going in, and then you pick out the toilet paper, and that's what you bring out as your value. Oh. You know, your supermarket sweep. It's to grab toilet paper.
I know. Here's my last thought, Dave, on this. So you mentioned the end of the world, and I'm just waiting. I'm going to click on one of the news channels here, you know, someday in the not too distant future, and they're going to have one of those countdown clocks. And it's not going to be for their town hall their town hall meeting at 8 o'clock tonight, or their interview with President Donald Trump tonight at 9 o'clock. It's going to be the end of the world. It's the end of the world countdown clock. Hey, you've got 5 hours, or maybe they'll start it like 3 or 4 days ahead of time for us. You know, I don't know.
Say goodbye to your loved ones. Get it done. Yeah. Do this. Do that. Don't worry. You can take off your mask and hug your mother, because the world is going to end.
Yeah. Forget the toilet paper. You don't have to worry about the toilet paper anymore, folks. You know,
not the king size. Not the king size. Here's the other thing about that riot. The only place in Boston you could find toilet paper, and this guy was able to find it, and maybe it wasn't a bad idea to grab it, but it probably was a waste of toilet paper to toilet paper that car that they toilet paper.
Wow, the toilet paper cars. I mean, that's the worst. Yeah,
that's wasteful. That's like, I don't know what it's like, but it's pretty bad.
Dave, if we're still doing this next week, I can't imagine what we're going to be talking about. I just can't, Dave. I'm a little afraid.
I think we're going to be talking about putting a new government in place and how we're going to reproduce. Not you and I, the society.
Maybe buying a boat or something like that. I don't know what we'll be looking for. Maybe going up to space. You know, maybe that's what we'll be doing.
I think this will be it.
Hooking a Greyhound onto that space capsule, bus. Yeah.
Can you imagine? Best meme that I saw was congratulations to the astronauts who left the Earth today.
Yes.
Good choice.
Good call. No, really. Yeah, seriously.
Good decision they made.
All right. Well, there he is, Dave Radigan. Maybe this will be our last get-together, Dave. Who knows?
But anyways, it's
good talking with you, and hopefully we'll have some better news next week.
Nice knowing you, Bill.